This is our number two.
It's time for the fastest 15 minutes of the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
Hey, Aaron, I heard you talking about the Ballard locks there.
Yeah.
Pedestrian bridges being open. You want to hear a fascinating story about the Ballard locks?
I would love to.
Okay, so when I was about 9 or 10 years old, they put in, right next to the big brick building, the stately building that you walk past just to get to the locks, they put in an electric eye and a counter. So it would count every person who passed through the electric eye. And I've always been kind of ADHD when it comes to anything with numbers. And so one summer beautiful day, my buddy Steve and I, We rode our bikes down to the locks, and I noticed every time I passed my hand in front of the electric eye, I would see the counter go up by one, of course. And so I sat there for about a half hour, just waving my hand in front of the electric eye. And to my delight, a week later in the Ballard News Tribune, I saw a little note that the locks set an attendance record. On the day that I did that. It was just, it was one of the great early triumphs in my life.
Well done, Dory. Well done.
Oh, man. By the way, I also, if you're into this sort of thing, my friends and I, we have a killer 9-hole frisbee golf course that we set up about 40 years ago at the Ballard Lock. So if you ever need a great urban frisbee golf course, just contact me. You have to hit light poles instead of the baskets with chains.
Nice.
But yeah, it's fantastic.
I'm a frolfer. I like a little bit.
I got you covered. If you need anything with the Ballard locks, I got you covered. I just want you to know that.
It's your old stomping grounds. We know. Yep.
Yes, sir. Okay. All right. Let's get into the fastest 15, a world of news in a tidy little 15-minute package just for you. There is a rather shocking story that just moved this morning. The exclusive belonged to thepostmillennial.com, but told the story about a couple of Seattle cops who yesterday afternoon, they walked into a local cafe. And the post-millennial, we have tried to get hold of this business. We've tried to get hold of the owner. And I'll tell the story first, and then I'll tell you, or Chris Martin will tell you about our efforts to get hold of him. But the post-millennial is identifying the business as Chocolati on North 45th Street in the Wallingford neighborhood. Now, according to their report, at 4:30 yesterday afternoon, a Seattle police officer and a trainee went into Chocolati looking for a snack. And according to Chocolati's website, Chocolati was established in 2003 with the philosophy of making delightful chocolate confections that are both aesthetically creative and of the highest quality. Okay, well, according to Seattle Police Department sources, the employee behind the register finished serving the customer in front of the officer. The officer then walked up to the register to order. The employee, a white female with green streaks in her hair, ignored the officer. When the officer got her attention, he asked for a box of chocolates, and the employee said, "No, I won't serve you." The officer and the trainee left the shop. And then the post-millennial says they contacted Chocolati for a comment. A store employee answered the phone, and when they said they were calling about the cops being denied service, the employee said, "Is this how you want to spend your time, getting essential workers in trouble? Shouldn't you be spending your time harassing homeless people?" And the post-millennial said, "Well, can we leave a number for the owner or manager?" "You really want to spend your time getting essential workers in trouble?" And then the reporter for the post-millennial said that they'd try to reach the owner or manager another time. And the employee said, "Go bleep yourself." And now, after they published this article this morning, another cop contacted the post-millennial and said they had a similar story from a different date at a Chocolatey location on East Green Lake Way. So, assuming that this story is correct, and like I said, we tried to get hold of the owner. We're not going to name the owner. We're not going to name his business. But, Chris, you went to great lengths to try to get them to come on our show to give us some comment. And what were all the roadblocks you ran into?
I just checked their website again because it's down. Their website's down. I called the Wallingford store and a bunch of different times, and it was busy, so I think the phone's just disconnected or off the hook. And then I contacted the owner via Facebook and then also found out he has another job, so I wrote him at his place of business via an email to get a comment and just to double-check the story, and still haven't heard anything back.
Okay. So we have gone to great efforts. Like I said, we're not going to do anything like dox the owner, or he's got another job. But I will tell you, his other job is in the real estate industry, apparently, according to his Facebook site. I'm not going to name what it is, where it is. But I will say to the owner of Chocolatey, you owe the public an explanation if your employees refuse to serve cops. And maybe you'll become a hero. Maybe all the radical left in Seattle, although I don't get a sense that the radical left has money for fine chocolates. But maybe they do. And maybe you'll appeal so much to the cop-hating crowd in Seattle that it'll increase your business. And I think that's a chance you should take. But come out of hiding. Get your website back up. We also checked on Yelp, and Yelp has pulled, because this story has immediately gone national. And so people started, apparently, what often happens in cases like this is people start posting fake Yelp reviews saying how horrible the service is or the chocolates are. And so Yelp has suspended the legitimate comments about Chocolatey because the business is in the media right now. So my message to the owner, I'm not naming you, I'm not naming your real estate company, but you do owe the public an explanation, because there are still a lot of people around here who love our cops and who respect them and who don't like that Seattle police officers are leaving in droves, and that if the story is accurate as printed by the Post-Millennial, that snotty little store clerks are contributing to this atmosphere of just abject hatred toward our police officers. So to the owner of Chocolatey, I don't let go of stories. Okay, when you ignore us, it doesn't make me go away. And so you owe us an explanation that I'll share with my listeners. Like I said, maybe you're upset with your employee. I don't know. I just don't know. Maybe the employee is a reflection of the owner's attitude towards police. I don't know. But I want to find out. And you owe the public an explanation, because you are a business that opened and is welcome to the general public, including police officers. And if you're showing this kind of discrimination, I want to know why. Okay? And the fact that, according to the Post-Millennial, it's happened at two of their locations now, allegedly. I want to get to the bottom of this. So owner, get back to us. Follow up with us. And if you don't want to come on the air, get me a statement. But I want to know if this reflects what your business is all about, because we're not going away on this one. Our cops deserve better, in my view. All right, next up in the Fastest 15. Oh, how insane is this? So we told you yesterday or the day before about a police officer over in Idaho who made a funny little TikTok video. It was after LeBron James came out and posted the picture of the cop in Columbus, Ohio, who saved the life of a child who was getting stabbed to death. And he did it by sadly having to shoot and kill the 16-year-old girl who was trying to stab this other kid to death. So LeBron James said, "You're next," and posted a picture of the cop, which everyone interpreted as a threat. Well, the cop who made that funny TikTok video, let me refresh your memory. Nate Silversteren in Twin Falls, Idaho.
"Dispatch, I've arrived at that disturbance. We have LeBron call my cell phone right away, please. Thank you."
"Excuse me, sir. Excuse me. No, can you put the knife down, please, sir? Sir, no, 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 sir, don't stab him. No, no, stop stabbing. Stop. Oh, hold on. Hold on. It's LeBron. LeBron, hey, yeah, it's me again. Listen, I'm out here at this disturbance call, and there's a guy trying to stab another guy with a knife. What do you think I should do? Why does that matter?"
"Lie."
"Okay, well, they're both black. One guy's trying to stab another guy with a knife. Deadly force is completely justified." "Uh-huh. I see. So you don't care if a black person kills another black person, but you do care if a white cop kills a black person, even if he's doing it to save the life of another black person? I mean, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but then again, you are really good at basketball, so I guess I'll take your word for it. All right. Yep. Okay. All right. Thanks, LeBron. Michael Jordan's the GOAT. What? Nothing. I gotta go. Sorry, guys. You're on your own. Good luck."
That's Twin Falls Detective Nate Sylvester, who made that video. Well, as of this morning, it had been viewed well over 4 million times. And, of course, it is now generating controversy, including people who are demanding that this cop be fired for making a funny TikTok video about LeBron James putting a target on a cop's back. So he works for the Bellevue Marshal's Office there in Twin Falls. And they've issued a statement. "The Bellevue Marshal's Office is aware of the extreme controversy regarding Deputy Marshal Sylvester's viral TikTok. The statements made do not represent the Bellevue Marshal's Office. The Bellevue Marshal's Office always demands that our deputies engage with our citizens in a friendly and professional manner. This is not how we expect our deputies to act on duty or use city time. This is a personnel issue that is being dealt with internally. We would like to thank everyone that took the time to reach out to us." Now, if this cop gets punished, this is the insanity of things. People want the same punishment for this cop for making a funny little TikTok video as they want for, you know, cops who actually fire their guns and strike somebody. You know, the woman who thought she was shooting her taser and she says it was accidentally her gun and killed the guy a couple weeks ago. And she's out of a job now. They actually think that the punishment for making a funny TikTok video should be the same as somebody who mistakenly uses their gun instead of a taser and kills somebody. This is the lack of proportionality that has gotten so insane. And then speaking of cops and LeBron, yesterday I read you a long letter from Los Angeles 24-year police veteran Dion Joseph. Dion Joseph is a large, imposing African-American cop who's worked some of the toughest neighborhoods in Los Angeles, and everybody talks about how he is a man of compassion and faith and of the people, and he's out there to help every day. And he was disgusted by LeBron James' post targeting the cop in Columbus, Ohio. Dion Joseph is now speaking about the long letter that I read on the air yesterday. He told Fox if he would have done the same thing as if he was that cop in Columbia.
"I probably would have done the same thing. My goal is to save lives. Like I said, every morning I pray that I never, ever have to take a life. And once again, I feel so sorry for the family of that young lady. But unfortunately, the officer had to try to save a life in a split second. And people don't understand how fast these things happen. They really have to understand how fast they happen."
And in the letter, he said he used to be like LeBron.
Once I was a young African-American male in society. And when I came up in the late 80s and 90s and early 90s. So that was a very violent and turbulent time. But also it was a time of anti-police sentiment where, you know, you had the Rodney the King incident, Dalton Street, and all these other things. And all my family and friends, we kind of had shared this monolithic view that all police were inherently our enemy. They were our natural enemy. I mean, I joined an activist group in high school that all we talked about was how bad the police were and this and that. And, you know, and also I was just bombarded at the time with Hollywood movies that depicted cops in a negative light. My favorite rap groups were NWA, Public Enemy, KRS-One. They were guiding me. It's almost like a steady indoctrination to the thought that all police were bad. And also I had a couple of negative encounters with police that didn't sit well and helped me, made me forget about the good contacts, because you never remember the good. You always remember the trauma. And my mind changed when I had no choice but to be a police officer. I did not want to be a cop. But once I stepped across that line, I discovered that the vast majority of police officers are just hardworking, decent human beings from all walks of life, and that 90% of what's said about police officers is just not true. We're not perfect. Yes, there's a negative exception, but there's an honorable rule, too, that we need to talk about them as well and get balance.
Sounds like a good man, L.A. Police Officer Dion Joseph. All right, finally in the Fastest 15, are you ready for Trump 2024? Donald Trump went on the Dan Bongino podcast this morning and talked about that possibility.
I think the most likely term, if I do that, and I am giving it the most serious consideration, as you can imagine, and based on every poll that I'm seeing and everything else, it's something that is, you know, very positive. Nobody's seen anything more positive. So I'm giving it very serious consideration. If you do it, I think probably the most appropriate time would be right after the 22 election. That's my opinion. Yeah. Could do it sooner, but I think right after the election would be good, especially if you have a good election.
That's somebody who sounds like he's going to run again. And should I say it? Should I say the words that just infuriate so many people who listen? He was so much better than Joe Biden. It's not even close. All right, that is your Fastest 15.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes of the News. Fast Dory's Fastest 15.
It's not even close. Are you kidding me? All right, coming up next, Brock Huard is going to join us. Boy, Brock got the highest praise from one of the best of men today. We'll talk to him live next here on the Dory Monson Show.
Uh-oh, guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Huh? Anybody? Mike. What day is it, Mike? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's Hump Day with Huard.
Blue in it, check. Brown, 24, Razor.
Brought to you by IRG Physical and Hand Therapy on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. With a 12s, hear the Hawks.
Play fake to Benny Russell, lets it go. Down the far sideline, reaching up, making the catch. Touchdown, Seahawks!
Here's Dory Monson.
Yes, this is the day when we are graced with the presence of one Brock Huard, who joins us live this afternoon from somewhere at a higher elevation than I am right now. Hey, Brock, how are you?
I'm doing well, yeah. Snow on the ground this morning, sunshine in the afternoon, the full season's out here in the Rocky Mountains. Doing well, buddy, you?
Well, just imagine my delight as I wake up this morning, I wipe the sleep out of my eyes and open my laptop, and I see a tweet from one of the great people, one of the great coaches, Tony Dungy, who writes, "My former quarterback, Brock Huard, has a pre-draft show that's different from the normal shows, featuring Clemson coach Dabo Sweeney. We'll take a look at guys like Trevor Lawrence off the field. I think you'll enjoy the perspective." In the whole spectrum of draft coverage, which is just an insane amount, yep, for him to cite you and lift you above the crowd, that's pretty cool.
That is a sweet man, one of my favorites. I know years ago you listened to the podcast he and I did on my Above and Beyond, the intersection of faith and sports. And I don't know if there is a better man in today's day and age that intersects that so very well and has impacted so many lives. So that was, yes, that was very sweet of Coach Dungy to put that out. And, you know, at ESPN back in the day, Dory, they like to say at times, humanize, then analyze. Tell the human interest story, right? Humanize them. Make that person known. Communicate their story. And then go ahead and do all the analyzing of the football that you want to do after that. And that's what we did. Compassion International sponsored that show. Sports Spectrum, an amazing organization, a media outlet for those in the Christian faith, helped build that program. And that's what we really tried to do, is humanize Dabo, humanize Trevor Lawrence. A couple other former teammates, Justin Forsett is on there, former Seahawks, Steve Stenstrom. So, yeah, it's a pretty neat 58 minutes if you want to go find that online and check it out.
Yeah, it's very cool. You know, it's interesting you mentioned the humanize, then analyze. And it was their parent company, ABC, that back in the 80s, I think it might have even been back into the 70s. They started the Up Close and Personal at the Olympics.
Oh.
And it was the same thing. They started weaving these storylines that made you care about the athletes so much. And the thing that's sad today is athletes seem to have a conformity now. You have to think a certain way or else. And, I mean, I know that there are exceptions, like this kid, Trevor Lawrence, who's going to be the number one pick in the draft. But for a lot of people, if you don't think a certain way, you're just going to be ostracized now. And I miss that broader range of people and thought that used to embody athletics.
Yeah, both. I'm kind of both sides of that spectrum, right, Dory? And one, can you be vulnerable? Right? Can you share those stories and be vulnerable, or do you need to always present yourself as all these NFL draft guys who are going to get drafted tomorrow? All are told, hey, man, make sure you tell them football's the most important thing. You love football. Football's your life, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, Trevor Lawrence was a little bit vulnerable. It's like, no, I love football. I love competing, but it doesn't define me. It's not my identity. Yeah. So you're right. There's a conforming, like, don't be vulnerable. Say what everybody wants you to hear. And then, you know, what you do on a daily basis in the news cycle, you got to be real careful about what you say and how you go about saying it today. Or, you know, there's a whole large contingent that will try to X some of that out.
Well, one of the big debates is, you know, everybody's debating masks and no masks and, you know, these phases. King County's public health guy just yesterday said King County will likely roll back to phase two. And, you know, my wife and I were talking when we heard this last night, because she works at the high school where I used to coach. And she said, does that wipe out the high school basketball season, which is supposed to happen in May? It's a late spring sport this year. And I don't know to whatever extent you are comfortable talking about this, but I know that you've got some pretty powerful thoughts about all of that.
Yeah. Well, I know the basketball starts staggered because there are some programs, Dory and Kinko, that have been going, and then others are gonna get going here soon. So they've tried to, and kudos to some of the powers that be at the WIAA that have just been fighting and clawing and tearing to say, man, our kids need to play. I mean, if there has been one message between you and I over the last, I don't know, 9 months, more than anything else that has reoccurred on these hump days, it's what? It's about our youth. It's about them playing. It's about them learning and growing and developing and all that has been stripped of them. And from the seniors last year, you know, who lost the finality of their senior year, and you thought, okay, you know, bless their hearts. And man, that you know, they endured that. And man, it's now gone on all year. And there's been kids still in Washington State that have not gone to school all season long. And who, and now, if this does get rolled back, who have been waiting since, you know, December to have a little bit of a basketball season, to have a little bit of a glimmer of hope. So, yeah, that you and I have just beat this drum as loud as we can. I have watched it. I have seen it. You know, I know you probably talked about the 800-meter runner down in Oregon who collapsed at the end of the race. The only state that's requiring, I believe, their track athletes outdoors to wear a mask, which is clinically insane based on all the science and data. That makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. But, you know, they are doing it because they are, I guess, capable and allowed to do it. So, Yeah, it's been a lot of conversation. In the weeks ahead, Dory, I'm going to have some special opportunities actually in the month of May to get out to some schools and encourage some kids, because just the catastrophic events that have been going on and kids taking their lives across the state of Washington absolutely breaks my heart.
Yeah, I know. And that's the thing, is I understand protecting the most vulnerable. I understand we do whatever we can to protect the elderly and the people with the comorbidities. But I guarantee you, and I know you know this, that our government is killing more kids than COVID ever has, with all of the isolation and keeping them in the home. And some of them are in abusive homes. And it's just... I truly think, Brock, when you and I sit down 20, 30 years from now and reflect back on our lives, I think we're going to look back on this as maybe the most insane period in our living history.
Well, I sure hope it's not 20 or 30 years, man. I hope there's a time for the people to be able to step up and the leadership to be able to step up. And as I said, the WIAA has fought for those kids in that state to have some semblance of a season. Had they not, Dory, I don't think there would have been any high school sports, certainly not any indoors. I hope it's not 20 years from now that we're doing that. I hope it's 5 years from now. I hope it's 3 years from now that we can say, sheesh, that is just power just that was unleashed in a way that was so unhealthy. I know it was hard in the beginning. There was so much unknown. I know there has been horrific, horrific pain and hardship and hurt and death. This is a very real virus, not to minimize any of it. But to our young people, the data is shockingly clear. And when you have seen other states and other leadership step up to say, no, our kids need to play, our kids need to grow, our kids need to learn and develop, it is right there in front of us. It does make it even more heartbreaking.
Hey, we didn't wait 20 years. I think we just did it today.
Yes.
We accelerated things great.
Hey, are you tanned and rested, by the way, as well? Did you get a nice little tan last week?
In fact, I believe if I'm on my natural course right now, I'm somewhere between 24 to 36 hours away from horribly peeling.
Okay. I also, lastly, didn't understand your text back at all. When I asked how your golf went and you said, like, the last two rounds of my life, I'm like, what? What does that even mean? Like you were.
I was so glad. Brock was thinking about coming down to Palm Desert to golf with me just for one day last week.
Wanted to.
And I am so glad you didn't, because I have become the world's worst golfer. I used to be a mid-80s golfer.
Oh, no.
I'm now like Charles Barkley of a sudden.
Oh, no. And you played one of the nicest courses in the country. Oh, no.
I played two of the nicest in the country. No, I'm telling you. I was grateful you didn't come down, because I would have been humiliated if you'd seen my golf game. All right. Brock, good talking to you. By the way, like as Tony Dungy recommended, how do people find the show? Just Google Sports Spectrum and
Brock Huard. I just retweeted it. Yep, I just retweeted and go to my site. You could see it there as well, at Brock Huard. Just go there and you can watch that tonight and hopefully be encouraged and inspired, because we need encouragement.
Amen. All right. Good talking to you, and we'll do it again next week.
Sounds good, Dory.
Thank you, sir. All right, Brock Huard joining us as he does every Wednesday. Lots more straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show.
Rolls on, rolls on, rolls on.
Oh, yeah. A bunch of listeners reached out to me, and we told you yesterday about an email that the CEO of the Snohomish County YMCA sent out to their members. And I just found it to be really distasteful. Not because of what the words were. I just don't want or need to be lectured by the YMCA. I told the story yesterday. I worked at the Y for 3 years when I was in college. I was a summer camp counselor. I was a latchkey counselor. I coached as a volunteer at the Y when my girls were little. My wife and I often make memorial gifts to the Y when somebody important to us passes. We're done for a while. Although, I shouldn't punish King County Y. The Snohomish County that sent this out. But the email that went out said, Derek Chauvin is a convicted murderer. He has been convicted of the murder of George Floyd. These are facts. If you're reading this, you probably don't live in Minnesota, but I'm certain you believe yourself to be on the side of justice. And then it goes on about how the Derek Chauvin verdict was a victory for a family, a city, a state. It talks about how, you know, this is about more than just this one story, and that and the person who writes it, the CEO of the Snohomish Y, and I personally reached out to him last night, and I said, hey, I'm likely going to talk about this again on Wednesday's show, and I would love to hear your perspective, and I'll be fair to you. And he wrote back graciously yesterday and turned down our interview request, but he did not respond to me reaching out to him last night. But he wrote, as a white heterosexual male, I have always had privilege, but I've not had accountability. And he talked about how we are complicit in this moral drama that's playing out, and we have to eradicate the hate and racism faced by our neighbors, friends, and peers who are Black, Indigenous, and people of color. Well, a lot of us don't have that hatred that you're talking about to people who are Black, Indigenous, and people of color. And I don't want to be lectured about it by you and your guilt. I have nothing to feel guilty about in how I live my life and how I treat all people. I don't want to be lectured by the YMCA. And then he ended it with what I thought was bizarre. Every Y program not only has the opportunity to make measurable progress in this fight, but the responsibility and mandate to do so. So every Y program now has a mandate to lead some social justice cause. And the first parent who sent this to me had signed his 8-year-old daughter up for swim lessons. And you know, he wanted to know, hey, are they going to teach my daughter how to swim? Or are they going to fill her brain with all kinds of guilt and all this, you know, all the stuff that's in this email? And that's what I wanted to find out. That's why I invited the guy again to come on today. But you know, here's what's interesting. Just in the last couple of days, there is a script that has gone out, because I've heard from people who said, yeah, my healthcare provider sent me a email about Derek Chauvin and other businesses and community groups. And in the media, the message was identical from media people, including so-called late-night comedians, after the Derek Chauvin verdict.
The fact is, we still have work to do. The family does not get to have their loved one back. There is still work to be done.
And while this is a step in the right direction, there's still a lot of work to be done.
But this...
That's Jimmy Fallon! And they're all... There's still work to be done. There's still work to be done. There's still work to be done. Oh, let's see what Stephen Colbert has to
say. This is just one stop. There is more work to be done.
It's a feeling like, okay, this happened, now the work really begins.
So we can't leave this moment or look away thinking our work is done.
This moment is where the work begins.
We've got a lot of work to do, but this feels like a beginning rather than an ending.
We have a lot of work to do in this country because systemic racism has infected us all.
And we know that until we stop the violence, then we have work to do.
There's a lot of work to be done to get to liberty and justice for all.
We do what we're told. We do what we're told.
We'll check the news for you. And then, big lead at 2. Talk to a parent whose kid was at the school where they found the gun. Turns out to be a pellet gun. But we'll hear that story live next. Story Monson Show.